This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
If I asked you to make authentic baechu kimchi in your kitchen tonight, there is a very high probability you would just completely panic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most people would instantly freeze up.
Right. For a lot of home cooks outside of Korea, the immediate mental image involves, like, clearing your schedule for the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. You picture yourself sourcing actual bathtubs full of cabbage.
Yeah, tracking down highly obscure fermented seafood pastes.
Exactly. And just hoping you have an earthen pot buried in the backyard somewhere to store it all in.
We project this massive amount of complexity onto dishes with deep cultural roots. We assume that because a food carries immense historical and cultural weight, the barrier to entry must be impossibly high.
Like, it's totally out of reach for a cook just standing in their kitchen on a random Tuesday night.
Right. We think it's off limits.
But what if I told you the data completely contradicts that panic?
Right.
I mean, what if the culinary profile we are looking at today officially rates the expected difficulty as just, well, easy?
Which is such a wild pivot from what most people expect.
It really is.
Yeah.
And the data lists the prep time at a mere 30 minutes. Plus, it explicitly states it requires zero meat and zero seafood.
That completely upends the entire mythology surrounding the dish.
Right.
It shifts the conversation from this unattainable, intimidating culinary artifact to a highly practical, accessible home kitchen project.
And that's exactly our mission for this deep dive. Today, we're taking a staple of Korean cuisine, baechu kimchi. And we are just stripping away the intimidation factor for the curious home cook. We're looking at a highly specific, stripped-down data profile of this dish.
And just to set the parameters for you, the listener, right at the top, we are focusing purely on the culinary mechanics today. Just the hard facts provided in our source data.
Those sweeping historical epics today.
Exactly. We are leaving aside any grand historical lore. We are not diving into origin stories. And we are absolutely avoiding any medical or health claims.
We're just looking at the pure, practical reality of what this food actually is, how the mechanics of it function, and how it fits seamlessly into your modern kitchen.
Okay.
Let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Because to really understand this dish, let's start with the terminology. Our source explicitly identifies the dish as baechu kimchi, which is romanized as baechu kimchi, and it notes that it belongs to the broader Korean food category of kimchi.
That distinction right there is huge.
I want to pause there, actually, because outside of Korea, those two concepts are almost always treated as exact synonyms.
They are, and honestly, the conflation of those two terms is arguably the biggest linguistic hurdle for global cooks trying to understand Korean cuisine.
Yeah, the word kimchi is doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting internationally.
And it is usually being applied incorrectly. When you hear the word kimchi in North America or Europe, you are almost universally picturing one very specific red, spicy, fermented cabbage dish.
But the data draws a hard boundary.
It does. Kimchi is the category. Baechu kimchi is simply one specific dish living inside that massive category.
So wait, by explicitly calling it baechu kimchi, does that imply kimchi is actually a massive category and baechu is just one specific star player?
That is exactly what it means. It's an umbrella term.
Wow. It reminds me of how people talk about pasta. Like if you sat down at a restaurant, pointed at a bowl of spaghetti bolognese and just said, "I am eating pasta," you wouldn't be wrong.
No, you'd be factually correct.
Right, but you would be completely ignoring the fact that ravioli, penne, and linguine also exist.
Mm-hmm.
Is using the word kimchi to describe just this one cabbage dish essentially doing the same thing?
That is a perfect parallel. Calling baechu kimchi just kimchi is functionally identical to holding up a bowl of chicken noodle and declaring, "I am eating soup."
Operating under the assumption that all soup everywhere is just chicken noodle.
Exactly. It erases the sheer scale of the cuisine.
So the word baechu is the actual identifier here. It's the specific star player on the team that we are focusing on today.
And our source data provides the translation tools to verify this mechanically. It offers the English search hint, napa cabbage kimchi.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, alongside the Spanish name, kimchi de con napa.
Which means baechu literally just translates to the napa cabbage variant.
It does. And grasping that taxonomic distinction completely alters a cook's relationship to the food.
How so?
Well, you are no longer burdened with the idea that you are making the definitive kimchi representing the entirety of Korean preservation culture. you know?
Right. You're not carrying the weight of the whole country's history on your shoulders.
Exactly. You are simply making the Napa cabbage iteration of a much broader culinary framework. It brings the scale of the project down to a manageable size.
It localizes it to a single physical ingredient. You aren't trying to capture lightning in a bottle.
Hmm.
You are just working with a specific type of cabbage.
Which is an incredibly empowering realization for someone who feels intimidated by unfamiliar cuisines.
Mm.
The moment you define the boundary of what you're making, the fear of messing up the entire culture's food dissipates. You are just making baechu kimchi.
That is so freeing. And that structural understanding leads us directly into the production data. Because once a cook knows exactly what physical ingredient they are handling, well, the immediate next question is about the labor involved.
Naturally. You want to know what you're signing up for.
Yeah, and I have to push back a little on the production stats in our source, because the math did not match the mythology in my head at all.
You're talking about the difficulty and time metrics.
Yes. The data profile rates the expected difficulty for baechu kimchi as easy, which, okay, surprised me. But more shockingly, the expected prep and cooking time is listed at approximately 30 minutes.
It sounds impossible, right?
Yeah, it does. I always pictured making kimchi as this giant, intimidating, weekend-long project requiring, like I said, bathtubs full of cabbage. But 30 minutes, that's a throw-it-together-while-watching-a-sitcom level of time investment.
No, it completely changes how you view it.
But wait, fermentation by its very definition is a biological process that takes days or even weeks. So how are we arriving at a 30-minute metric? Are we looking at a completely different fast-casual version of the dish?
No, no. What's fascinating here is that you are hitting on a crucial distinction between active human labor and passive biological process.
Okay, walk me through that.
We often look at fermented foods and calculate the time investment based on when the product is ready to eat, rather than when the cook is actually working. The 30-minute metric provided in our data isolates the human variable. It is measuring the active prep and cooking time.
So the cabbage and the lactic acid bacteria are putting in the days of overtime, not me.
Precisely. The data separates your physical effort from the biology's effort. And when you look at it through that lens, the easy rating makes complete logical sense.
Because you aren't doing the hard part.
Right. Think about what makes a recipe inherently difficult for a home cook. It is usually highly technical, time-sensitive tasks. Tempering chocolate, executing complex butchery, or monitoring a delicate emulsion that could break at any second.
High-risk maneuvers where a 10-second distraction ruins the whole dish.
But look at the mechanics of preparing baechu kimchi. You are chopping Napa cabbage. You are applying salt. You are mixing a seasoning paste and applying it to the leaves.
You are literally just preparing vegetables.
Exactly. The fundamental techniques do not require a culinary degree. The margin for physical error during that 30-minute window is actually incredibly wide.
That is a fascinating psychological shift. We conflate the complexity of the flavor with the complexity of the labor.
We do it all the time.
Because a fermented dish tastes incredibly deep and complex, we assume the physical acts required to assemble it must be equally complex. But the data is telling us it's basically just a highly intentional 30-minute assembly process.
It actively dismantles the gatekeeping we accidentally create around traditional foods. I mean, a 30-minute time investment is essentially the length of a sitcom episode.
It really is.
That places baechu kimchi firmly in the category of a casual weekday project. It empowers cooks outside Korea to try making it on a random Tuesday, bridging the gap between a seemingly complex cultural dish and an accessible home kitchen project.
Okay, so we have established that the active labor is totally manageable. The intimidation factor regarding time and technique is gone. But that brings us to the actual structural composition of the dish and who can actually sit down at the table to eat it.
This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, because the flavor and dietary profile in our data holds some massive surprises, especially regarding how adaptable this dish really is.
The accessibility of the end product is arguably the most vital piece of this profile.
Let's start with the heat. The data sheet gives baechu kimchi a spiciness level of medium. We often see international food stereotyped or even fetishized as extreme spice challenges in Western media. But a medium rating feels very intentional.
Oh, it absolutely is. A medium spice rating operates as a psychological safety net for the global palate. It indicates that the dish has a definitive structural heat. It isn't meant to be bland, but it is not designed to be a painful endurance testing challenge.
Right. It normalizes the dish. It treats it as a daily staple rather than some sort of stunt food on a late night talk show.
Exactly. It means you can serve it at a dinner party and be reasonably confident your guests aren't going to be sweating through their napkins. It respects a baseline palate.
It also provides a baseline for you to adjust from, right? Like, if the definitive profile is medium, you know you don't need to hunt down the world's most aggressive chili peppers to achieve an authentic result. You just need a balanced, accessible level of heat.
Spot on. But here is where the data gets genuinely surprising for a lot of people. The profile explicitly lists its meat content, or rather, the complete lack of it.
Yes.
It contains no pork, no beef, and no chicken, and then it explicitly states no seafood.
Wait, I really tripped up on that part. I thought traditional kimchi almost always relied on things like fish sauce or shrimp.
That is the data point that challenges a lot of preconceived notions.
It really does, because the popular conception outside of Korea is that to make a real traditional kimchi, you absolutely must use an obscure brand of fermented shrimp or fish sauce or raw oysters to achieve that deep, pungent umami flavor.
That's the myth, yes.
But this specific data profile draws a hard line at zero seafood and further notes, vegetarian substitution.
Yeah.
Yes. Is this suggesting that the fermented seafood isn't the load-bearing pillar of the dish we thought it was? Is this just a blank canvas for the home cook?
You nailed it. What this data reveals is that Baechu kimchi is fundamentally a structural mechanism, not a rigid, unchangeable list of ingredients. By keeping the spice at an approachable medium and explicitly stripping away the terrestrial meats and the seafood, and by officially validating vegetarian substitutions, this profile presents the dish as the ultimate universally adaptable template.
So the essence of the dish survives without the fish sauce. The fermentation of the cabbage and the aromatics is doing the heavy lifting, not the seafood.
The structural integrity holds up perfectly. And think about the implications of that for a modern home cook trying to feed a diverse group of people.
Oh, navigating dietary restrictions is often the biggest barrier to trying a new international recipe.
It really is. You want to make something new, but then you realize one friend has a shellfish allergy, another is vegetarian, and someone else avoids pork for religious reasons. And suddenly, you just order pizza.
Exactly. It becomes too stressful. But look at the parameters we just established with this data. Is it a spice challenge? No, it's medium. Does it violate major religious dietary laws regarding pork or beef?
No, they're totally absent.
Right. Does it trigger shellfish or seafood allergies? The data explicitly states no seafood. Can your vegetarian friends eat it? Yes, substitutions are welcomed. Furthermore, the profile lists no specified allergens or religious and dietary restrictions whatsoever.
It's the ultimate host-friendly dish hiding in plain sight. It's a crowd pleaser that somehow got a reputation for being exclusive and difficult.
By stripping away the regional specificity of ingredients like fermented shrimp, this data profile creates a highly adaptable template for global adoption. It bends to the needs of the cook's kitchen, rather than forcing the cook to bend to rigid, hard-to-source ingredients.
It proves that you don't need hard-to-find ingredients or a ridiculously high spice tolerance to achieve the target taste. Adaptability is actually a core feature of the dish, not a flaw.
That's huge. It removes the tyranny of strict authenticity. You don't have to abandon the project just because your local supermarket doesn't carry salted fermented shrimp. You grab your Napa cabbage, you keep the spice medium, you use a vegetarian umami substitute like soy sauce or mushroom powder, and the data says you are still authentically participating in the mechanics of Baechu kimchi.
Which brings us to a really fascinating macro-level conversation about how this knowledge actually travels across borders. Because adapting the ingredients is only half the battle, right?
Right. The other half is simply finding the food in a digital globalized world.
Exactly. The translation data.
Yes. We touched on this briefly when we defined the kimchi category, noting the English search hint Napa cabbage kimchi and the Spanish name kimchi de col Napa. But I want to dig into the cultural impact of these specific translations because it feels much bigger than just a helpful grocery store tip.
Oh, it is. It is the invisible infrastructure that makes global cuisines accessible.
To me, it's like a digital compass for the grocery store. If an algorithm, a recipe app, or a grocery store database rigidly insists on only using the cultural identifier, Baechu, it essentially builds a wall around the dish.
A massive wall.
Right. If you are a home cook in the American Midwest or a student in Mexico City and you type Baechu into your local grocery delivery app, you're probably going to get zero results.
You are locked out of the culinary experience by a linguistic wall. The ingredient is likely sitting right there in the produce aisle, just feet away from you, but the rigid taxonomy prevents you from finding it.
But by explicitly linking the cultural name to functional, localized translations like Colnapa, the data maps the exotic to the familiar. It's basically standardizing food data across borders.
It tells that cook in Mexico City, the thing you call Colnapa is exactly the same structural ingredient as the thing called Bechu. You already have the tools.
We are looking at the democratization of a cuisine through data. When we decouple the cultural name from the functional reality of the physical ingredient, we flatten the global food landscape in the best way possible.
It proves the dish isn't some rare, unattainable thing. It's literally just cabbage.
And that realization is profound. If the Spanish translation was simply a phonetic spelling like kimchi de baichu, it wouldn't actually help anyone who didn't already understand Korean terminology.
No, it would be totally useless. By translating the concept of the ingredient, like Colnapa, rather than just phonetically spelling the Korean word, it allows home cooks anywhere in the world to participate in the culture. It removes the language barrier from the cooking process entirely.
It invites participation rather than just observation. This food isn't a museum exhibit. It's a living recipe that belongs in your kitchen, too.
It is a brilliant example of how data taxonomies and search algorithms can actually bridge cultural divides rather than widen them. The search hint, Napa cabbage kimchi, is doing the quiet, unglamorous work of making Korean cuisine accessible to millions of people who might otherwise be too intimidated to try.
It's just brilliant. So what is the ultimate takeaway here for you, the listener, looking at your own kitchen right now? We started this deep dive talking about how traditional recipes can feel like these fragile, rigid blueprints hidden behind glass, untouched and perfectly precise, and how we are terrified of messing them up.
We assumed baechu kimchi was a highly complex, labor-intensive, heavily spiced dish that demanded rare ingredients and total weekend commitment.
And the data just methodically deconstructed every single one of those assumptions.
Yeah.
We learned that kimchi is just the broad category, and baechu is simply the highly functional Napa cabbage variant.
We discovered that the act of human labor is rated as easy and requires only about 30 minutes, completely shattering the myth that you need to dedicate an entire weekend to the process.
We saw how a medium spice level creates a universally welcoming palate, and how the explicit lack of mandatory meat or seafood makes the dish a brilliant, flexible canvas for vegetarian diets and allergy-conscious hosts.
And finally, by looking at functional translations like Colnapa, we realize that the global food system is already mapped out to help you find exactly what you need at your everyday local store.
Baechu kimchi isn't a culinary fortress designed to keep you out.
Not at all.
The data proves it is an open framework designed to be adapted, assembled in half an hour, and enjoyed by anyone, anywhere. And you have the tools right now to bring this staple of Korean cuisine into your own home without needing specialized equipment or dietary compromises.
It is a testament to the fact that the most enduring cultural staples are often the most mechanically forgiving. They survive for generations precisely because they are adaptable, not because they are rigid.
Which leaves you with something to chew on before your next grocery run. If a dish with as much immense cultural weight and global recognition as baechu kimchi can actually be this welcoming, this adaptable, and taking just 30 minutes to execute, what other global culinary staples are you needlessly intimidated by in your own kitchen?
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.